From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Lower Haight.
Outer Richmond.
Fremont.
South of Market.
The Marina.
The E.
Trail Hill. The dirty 94107.
I'm from Israel, living in Santa Clara.
Coming up, how do first responders prepare for disasters? Well, one way is by running drills.
The scenario today is a terrorist event happens here at Moffett Field with repercussions around the entire Bay Area.
The law enforcement training event Urban Shield is returning to the Bay Area, and like last time, it's creating controversy.
So you see this big mentality of our communities being militarized and being oppressed.
And then we'll meet a musician grappling with leaving her country behind.
The last question is, how can I make my land forgive me?
Home and safety, today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Mass shooters, natural catastrophes, hostage situations are all coming to Alameda County this Friday. But don't worry, they're all drills, elaborate mock scenarios. Why? Well, it's the 10th annual Urban Shield, one of the largest law enforcement training exercises in the country, where firemen, medics, and police officers from across the country gather for firsthand training for our worst nightmares. But the event is also a target of protesters who say it's a model for police militarization. We'll hear the criticism through a member of the Stop Urban Shield Coalition, and then we'll go to the Alameda County Sheriff's Department for some response. But first, let's listen to some audio from the actual event to give us a feel for what's going to be happening on Friday. Reporter Sandhya Dirks was at Urban Shield back in 2014 when it was held in Oakland. Here's an excerpt of her piece.
It's the opening of Urban Shield, and already there's a word I keep hearing a lot, scenario.
The scenario today is a terrorist event happens here at Moffett Field with repercussions around the entire Bay Area.
That's Corrine Bartscher. She's with the Bay Area Urban Areas Security Initiative. It's funded by the federal government to coordinate regional homeland security. She's explaining how they've converted Moffett Federal Field in the South Bay into a scene out of a Hollywood summer blockbuster.
Line up along the Fox Estate. Face the building.
This is an actual SWAT team from Monterey County. They've entered into one of the ramshackle buildings here, old barracks, long abandoned. They have no idea what's going to happen. And that's the point, to put them through their paces, to simulate a real attack. Inside, armed mock terrorists lay in wait with mock hostages, and the SWAT team has to figure out who is who, rescue the innocent, and capture or shoot the guilty. About 15 long minutes later, the SWAT team emerges from the building, weapons drawn, with fake terrorists in handcuffs. And it's over. Well, this part is over. This scenario is also testing how the police interact with the media and how well they can control the information that spreads like wildfire in the mock cyberspace they've set up.
Brothers, today is the day for action. It is the day of rage today. We take out our grievances on those that have impressed them upon us.
That's Ethan Baker. He's playing one of the fake terrorists that was killed in the raid. Shortly after his death, this videotape message goes viral. The irony is Baker's real job is in anti-terrorism.
This will end up on the internet. I'll be a terrorist forever.
It won't, really. The fake Twitter and Facebook this video are posted to are part of a closed system. Still, Baker says when playing a terrorist, he felt some very honest adrenaline.
The weapons are heavy. They feel real. Everything feels real. You're in a dirty old building. The team came in. After they shot me, threw me down. It's bird poop in there. You know, your face is in bird poop. You're lying there. Everything's real except you're not bleeding.
Simulations like this are taking place at satellite locations across the Bay Area. And the Urban Shield Trade Show sets up shop all weekend in the Oakland Convention Center at the downtown Marriott Hotel. But while SWAT teams and first responders roam the aisles, packed with vendors selling everything from weapons to riot gear, protesters gather outside.
All right, so we came out here today to stop Urban Shield. Make some noise.
Right outside the Marriott on Broadway, more than 100 protesters have taken over the street. Those chants also contain cheers of victory. Oakland Mayor Jin Kwan has said this will be the last year the Urban Shield trade show will be hosted in the city.
How do people fist in the air? How do people fist in the air?
But Urban Shield will still have a home in Alameda County, and that's why the protesters are still out here.
So that's what the 2014 Urban Shield event sounded like. In the years since, police-community relations have only become more strained. I spoke with Omar Ali of AROC, the Arab Resource and Organizing Center. It's one of 43 organizations protesting this year's Urban Shield event, which happens this Friday in Pleasanton. I asked Ali what their concerns are about Urban Shield.
So Urban Shield is a regional and national and global SWAT training and weapons expo that happens in the Bay Area every year. It brings together law enforcement agencies from all across the nation, including federal and local state police troops, including as well as international paramilitary forces, like from the state of Israel. They expo a lot of military-grade weaponry from private contractors and from the Pentagon, and it includes also high-level surveillance technology. So since 2007, the Urban Shield has been around in the Bay Area and has been spearheaded by Alameda Sheriff Gregory Ahern, and it's been in the Bay Area ever since.
Hmm. Why are you protesting it?
It continues to criminalize, militarize our communities. It brings in all the different forms of repression and inspires this big military mentality of our local law enforcement. And so it is a result of the war on terror and the war on drugs. So you see this big mentality of our communities being militarized and being oppressed.
How so? How can you explain how this equals that? Because it's billed as an event that where law enforcement comes together and it's a practice for when there's a disaster, when there's some kind of a catastrophe, when there's a big disaster happening, they're training for that.
Urban Shield, the funding comes from the Department of Homeland Security through called the OWASI Fund, and it grants Urban Shield about between 1.6 million to 3 million every year. They disguise the Urban Shield program as part of a disaster and catastrophe relief. In reality, it is another way for police forces to militarize by using military-grade weaponry. Also, they have continued to put in a lot of first responders and emergency crews into these different scenarios. And the way they do it, they frame it in a sense that there's going to be a terrorist attack.
So and they're acting out scenarios.
They're acting out a lot of scenarios that are based on terror attacks and what they consider as threats to the state.
So you and a number of organizations have formed a coalition and you're formally protesting Urban Shield. You've been doing that. You're doing that this year as well. Can you tell me about the coalition? Who's with you?
So the Stop Urban Shield Coalition comprises of about 15 community-based organizations and is planning a statewide mobilization to rally against Urban Shield in Pleasanton this year.
So that's this Friday?
Yes, that is correct. That's this Friday.
So what will happen on Friday?
On Friday, we'll be there in front of the Alameda County Fair grounds in Pleasanton at 8 a.m. in the morning. We'll be out there. We're having a three-hour program rally and march around the Alameda County Fairgrounds, where the Urban Shield Expo is happening this year.
So you're protesting this idea, this whole idea of Urban Shield. Is there anything they can change in Urban Shield, assuming it's not going away? Let's just assume that.
Yeah.
What would make it better for you?
I don't think that it will be made better by any way, shape, or form, because a lot of the structure of the police is in of itself racist, and it targets a lot of people of color, targets people of color, black, brown, and Asian, and Arab, and Muslim. What we want to see is that the funding from the federal government go into better alternatives for community response and health, whether it be in health, education, or social services, in order to address the social and economic problems in our society, rather than continuously putting more and more money in security, violating people's civil liberties and human rights, on the premise that at some point, the nexus of terrorism, what they like to call prevention of terrorism.
That's Omar Ali of AROC, the Arab Resource and Organizing Center. It's one of the organizations protesting this year's Urban Shield event on Friday. Urban Shield is hosted by the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. I dropped by their headquarters to talk to Public Information Officer J.D. Nelson about the criticism we just heard. I asked him first about the concern over police militarization.
Well, certainly everybody has a right to protest, and that's the beautiful thing about living in the United States is you get to do that. Our response to that is we will continue to do an Urban Shield and to train the region for emergencies that might happen. If at some time, hopefully, where people throughout the United States and throughout the world stop taking hostages, stop killing people, stop having mass murders, we'd be much more happy to go back to the way it was. But unfortunately, I think the FBI says every 60 days there's a mass murder in the United States. So to think that that's going to stop, I think is a little bit foolish.
And so until we reach that level, which will not happen, then...
I mean, I like to say, I hate to say that it won't happen, but I'd like to hope that it will happen, that someday that sanity will return.
So I'm going to just talk about some of the criticisms of Urban Shield, if you can answer them. Lots of concern, firstly, about militarizing the police, that this vendor show brings weapons that really do the police need that kind of level, you know, that level of weaponry. How do you talk about that?
Sure.
Especially in this... time of increased, you know, there's a growing gap between certain communities of color and the police. There's scrutiny, there's mistrust. So in this current climate, when people say you're trying to militarize the police, how do you respond to that?
Well, the militarization of police has been going on for over 100 years, from the old six shooters, to ballistic vests, to iPhones that we use, to infrared technology that is used in fire service. It's all military technology. So most people don't complain about all the things that have happened through the military. What the complaint is the guns. Let's be honest about it. And we have a vendor show where they are going to have guns. But then again, we are law enforcement, so you would expect to have, that's unfortunately part of the tools of our trade, is we have to have weapons. And, every police officer in the United States now goes out with a weapon on. I don't think there's anybody left that's still unarmed. So as far as the more tactical stuff, which is what we get criticized for, that I would suggest does not come out on a daily basis. But that said, when you need it, you better have it, because we've seen time and time and time and time again situations arise throughout the United States and the world where you get these madmen that are just on sprees, and what are you going to do? We can't not go. We don't get to pick and choose our calls. So when somebody says, hey, this is happening, we don't just say, well, let's just call the military out for that one, because the public would not accept that. So if that's your duty, you better be ready to handle any situation that comes your way.
Mm-hmm. But is there an understanding of, you know, this concern from communities that the policemen in my community have access to these guns that do look like they're from, you know, straight from a war movie?
Well, they do, and it's up to the police agencies, and we do it to reach out to your communities, to do other things in the communities, to not see you every day, you know, dressed like you're in a tactical war, to see you as a person, which we try very hard to do within our agency. And I can't speak to every agency across the country, but then again, that said, you got to be able to turn the switch and go into a tactical mode if you have to.
There will be protesters. They will be there on the 9th. Do you feel like you get their grievance and you get their concerns and that they come from a real place?
Yeah, I do. I understand what they're saying, and as I said previously, you know, this is a delicate balance for law enforcement. This is not just here. This is everywhere. That said, and I think some of them can see our side as well. That you can't, you know, and it's a tough thing because you say, well, don't do the training. And then something happens and people go, oh, you guys should have done this, you should have done that. And you're like, well, wait a minute. You know, you didn't want us to do it, and now you're criticizing because we didn't do it the way, you know, you wanted us to do it. So it's a very difficult balance.
One argument is that nobody is talking about we wouldn't want protection if a big disaster happens. Mm-hmm. Disaster training, catastrophe happens, mm-hmm. That I don't think I've heard anybody speaking against. Mm-hmm. I think it is this idea that our community police people who will be on our streets will have this increased weaponry, mm-hmm. Or access to it, and people are afraid.
Well, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I've looked at interviews with people that have been in terrible scenarios, real scenarios, not real life scenarios, like Sandy Hook, like they just saw an interview with a guy in Orlando, and you hear them and they're saying, man, we're just waiting for the police to come in there. And so if you're that guy, the guy that has to go in, if I'm that guy, or if you're that guy, and they go, okay, you can just walk in and do what you got to do. And you go, well, wait a minute, what about my safety? What about my family? You know, shouldn't I have the best equipment? Shouldn't I have the best technology? Shouldn't I have the best protection so that when I go into that scene, I don't get killed? And that's kind of where we have to side with here. And because we're the law enforcement agency here, so we have to be prepared. And I get what the community says, and it's a tough thing. But you also have to see our side of it too, which is when it goes down, we're the ones. It's going to fall right on us. And again, we've had some situations here and natural disasters. And guess what? Everybody looks at you and says, well, what are you going to do? And we have to do, we can't just say, oh, no, well, that's sorry. Well, hopefully the president comes in and tells us what to do. It doesn't work that way. So therein lies the problem.
That's J.D. Nelson, Public Information Officer at the Alameda County Sheriff's Office. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now we turn from homeland security to a more personal relationship to home. Bay Area-based singer-songwriter Diana Gameros comes from Ciudad Juarez, a Mexican border town south of El Paso, Texas, ripped apart by violent drug cartels. She hasn't been home in over a decade. Her friends and family tell her things are getting better there, but she has to wait for her immigration status to get finalized before she can find out for herself. In the meantime, she's made the Bay Area her home, singing about the longing and joy that come from having a life in two worlds at once.
So this is called Cómo Hacer. It's a song that I wrote that came out of my need for wisdom, for home, and for forgiveness.
¿Cómo hacer que la vida perdure?
I just pose the questions knowing that it's okay to not have answers.
Que nada ni nadie escase. Si nadie es eterno. Nada es nuestro.
How could we make life last if nothing is ours, nothing is eternal? How can I make the walker fly?
¿Cómo hacer que el que camina vuelva?
How can I make the borders dissolve so that he can walk freely?
¿Cómo hacer que las fronteras se evaporen y caminar sin prisa lograr?
And without fear to his or her home.
Sin miedo llegar.
Most of my songs have, you know, they present this this issue, if you want to call it, or this, they present this circumstance or this topic, and there's always a like a happy or hopeful resolution to it.
¿Cómo hacer que mi tierra me perdone? ¿Cómo hacer para que su jardín ya vuelva?
The last question is, how can I make my land forgive me?
Y hacerle saber que lejos.
How do I tell her that it's hard to have to be away from her?
Decirle también que vivo por volver a verle.
I realize, especially being in California, you know, having such high numbers of Latinos and immigrants and undocumented immigrants and you know, everything that goes on in the Bay Area and in California in particular, inspired me a lot to sing about the things that were personal but also felt that could speak to, you know, to a greater audience and or to other people that could relate to what I was writing, what I was feeling. It's okay to not have answers all the time to the questions you pose. It's important to put them out there and answers will come eventually.
¿Cómo hacer que la vida perdure?
The Diana Gameros Trio takes part in the Women in Music series at St. Cyprian's Church in San Francisco on Saturday night. Music starts at 8 o'clock. Our team today includes Jürgen Klemm, Leela Day, Angela Johnston, Olivia Henry, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Judy Silber, Andrew Stelzer, and Chris Hoff. Our show was engineered today by James Rollins. Our line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.